This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Mr. Richard Hall, Assistant Director, National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomena. Tonight's subject, UFOs. Are they real? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is Mr. Richard Hall, Assistant Director of NICAP, better known as the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. Now, Mr. Hall has devoted the last several years of his life to investigating thousands of reports on unidentified flying objects. If you would like to ask Mr. Hall a question on tonight's topic, UFOs, are they real? Or make a comment on flying saucers, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Now, our Night Call operators are on duty. Our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. And our topic tonight, UFOs, are they real? Mr. Hall, what is NICAP?
NICAP is a 7,000-member private organization headquartered in Washington, D.C., and our main function is to investigate and sift reports of unidentified flying objects in an attempt to determine exactly what they are and exactly what is going on in this field.
And what have you discovered?
So far, we are completely convinced that some unexplained objects have been observed, that the official explanations given out by the U.S. Air Force do not make much sense, that there is something there beyond mistaken identification of familiar objects.
Well, now, what is that something out there?
This is a matter of speculation and theory. We have published our viewpoint that we think some of these objects might be something from another planet. We think this is a reasonable idea. We are not presenting this as dogma. If anybody has a better explanation, we'd be perfectly willing to listen.
Now, you say we. Who's included in this we?
Well, NICAP is governed by a board of governors of prominent figures in aviation, science, retired military officers. For example, one of our board members in Washington, D.C. is Mr. J.B. Hartranft, Jr., who is the president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. This is a membership of pilots, about 100,000 membership organization. Another board member is Dr. Charles P. Olivier, who is the president of the American Meteor Society and the former director of Flower and Cook Observatory at the University of Pennsylvania. One of our military or ex-military officers is Major Dewey Fournay, ex-Air Force Major Dewey Fournay, who used to monitor the official Air Force UFO project for the Pentagon. So as you can see, we have some very responsible individuals and very highly trained individuals who are on our board of governors.
Dick, do you like UFOs to be referred to as flying saucers?
Well, it doesn't make much difference to me. I tend to prefer the term UFO. I think it's slightly more objective, and flying saucers has some ridicule attached to it, I believe. Some people use it in a joking fashion.
Are there any reoccurring themes in UFO reports?
Oh, yes, many, many patterns that we have discovered, and we have published these in the documentary report, the UFO evidence. We have noted, first of all, patterns in the appearance of these objects, where quite frequently disc-shaped or elliptical-shaped objects, those are the two most common shapes reported. These have been seen for many, many years, probably at least 15 or 20 years. There are patterns in the maneuvers these objects go through. They fly characteristically in oscillatory paths, up and down motion, or side to side motion. They glow frequently when they're observed at night, and one of the most interesting and perhaps significant patterns is cases in which UFOs have passed over automobiles or near aircraft and the engines have been violently affected.
The engines of the automobile?
The engines of the automobile have been completely stalled, the headlights knocked out. If the car radio happened to be playing, it has gone off or emitted loud static as the UFO passed.
So what is that saying to you?
Well, this indicates that there's definitely something there, that the people are not having hallucinations. It's something apparently emitting some kind of an electromagnetic signal. It is a sort of physical evidence. It's by no means the only physical evidence that has been uncovered so far, but it is one form of it.
What is the best report that you've received on flying saucers?
Well, we've received so many good reports, it's hard to narrow it down to any single one.
Well, give me the most recent that has something behind it.
A couple of recent reports. On November 19th, in Indianapolis, Indiana, there were several police officers, one of whom was a former Marine. It's by no means the only physical evidence that has been uncovered so far, but it is one form of it.
What is the best report that you've received on flying saucers?
Well, we've received so many good reports, it's hard to narrow it down to any single one.
Well, give me the most recent that has something behind it.
A couple of recent reports. On November 19th, in Indianapolis, Indiana, there were several police officers, one of whom was a former Marine Corps radar operator, who saw an object that appeared round at times, cigar-shaped, and these objects moved in pairs, there were more than one object, moved in pairs at high speed. On November 2nd, there was another police sighting in Paugus, New Jersey, by Officer Harry Hamilton and other, and I believe a police dispatcher there, of a disc-shaped object with what appeared to be windows. Now, there's another pattern I forgot to mention. Quite often, there will be apertures or lights on the body of the UFO, which give the appearance of windows. We don't know that is what they actually are. They could be exhaust vents or most anything, but they give the appearance of windows. This particular UFO on November 2nd in New Jersey was seen at 1 a.m. hovering over a lake, and while it was being observed, the police officer had loud squeals on his police radio, one of these electromagnetic effects, and then the object suddenly took off and zoomed away to the north.
Well, now, if so many people see these things, why don't we have some good, clear photograph evidence?
Well, as a matter of fact, there are more and more good, clear photographs being taken. There have been some in past years. They have admittedly been few and far between, and the situation has been confused by a certain number of hoaxers, and more commonly, people who get photographic defects, some fault in the development or something of that nature, and they think it is a UFO and report it as such. But during this summer, when there was one of the most intensive sighting waves of all time.
This summer,
in spite of what people may have read in their newspapers, very little on the subject, this is one of the most intensive waves of all time. And during August, there were at least three very interesting photographs taken. One on August 1st by a newsman in Sherman, Texas. One on August 3rd by a county highway investigator in Santa Ana, California, Mr. Ed Heflin. In this case, we were able to investigate very thoroughly. We contacted Mr. Heflin through our Los Angeles unit and interviewed him at length, checked into his character and background. We put his photographs through very critical analysis, and they check out very well. Now, these show a clear-cut daylight photograph of a disc-shaped UFO, which this man observed, and which, incidentally, while he observed it, he was experiencing radio difficulty from his county highway vehicle, another electromagnetic effect. And on August 8th, Beaver County, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, a very interesting photograph was taken at night by some young men who were taking time exposure to the moon, and captured a very bright, glowing, disc-like object. And again, we checked into their background very thoroughly. We've got statements from the school principal and the local police officer, and all a number of other local people who vouch for the character of the people who took the pictures and saw the UFO. And we also subjected these pictures to very thorough analysis and checked out very well.
We're talking tonight to Mr. Richard Hall, and he is the Assistant Director of the National Investigation Committee. on aerial phenomena, better known as NICAP. And our topic, are UFOs real? Now, if you'd like to make a comment, give us a call here at area code 313-846-6601. Remember, you may reverse the charges if you wish. And, Dick, I have a caller standing by in Grand Junction, Colorado, a listener on KEXL, Mr. Mike Fluellen. Good evening, Mike. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Yes, about 2 years ago in New Mexico, there was a sighting by a patrolman, and they fenced off the ground, and they found little marks in the ground, and also the brush was burned. Whatever became of that, there was one small article in the local newspaper about it, and I never heard another thing about it.
Dick, are you familiar with that one?
Yes, I am. That was the sighting by Patrolman Lonnie Zamora of the Socorro, New Mexico Police Department. He was patrolling in his cruiser. He saw something that looked like an overturned automobile off the highway. He went to investigate, and he found sitting on the ground an egg-shaped or elliptical UFO, which was resting on four stilt-like legs. He continued thinking it was something normal, and he approached very close to it, and suddenly the thing emitted a loud roar and exhaust and took off straight up. When it cleared the ground, the noise stopped, and the exhaust stopped, and the thing quietly moved away horizontally. Now, we investigated that case very thoroughly. Officer Zamora has an extremely high character rating. This is even admitted by the Air Force, which incidentally has classified that case as unexplained. There were markings on the ground, and the object did scorch a bush and some foliage at the site.
Mike, did that answer your question?
Yes, I have just one more.
Surely.
What happens to these stories? They hit the papers maybe for about two lines, and then you never hear anything about them again. Does somebody shut them off or hush them up or something?
Well, I'm sure the Air Force does whatever it can to suppress this information and prevent it from getting in the papers, but I don't happen to believe that they have that complete control over the newspaper men at wire services. I believe that newswire editors in particular seem to get sated with UFO reports after a short while when there's a wave of them. They print a few, and then they think any additional reports are just more of the same, and they no longer have any news value from their point of view, so they just stop reporting them.
Why does the Air Force try to suppress the fact?
Well, this we don't know, but the whole history of their investigation has been to deny that anything at all out of the ordinary is going on in the skies, and we know better. We have thousands of reports in our files and a very high percentage of excellent witnesses.
Yes, but you still haven't answered why, Dick. Why do they want to suppress the reports?
Well, as I say, we don't have the answer, except there have been various theories advanced that they have a tiger by the tail, so to speak. Back a few years ago, in about 1952, they were stating that they feared a public panic if the facts were known. Now, this attitude makes very little sense to me, but it might be the military way of thinking that they have to have the situation well under control and be able to provide an answer, not just a question.
Mike, have you ever had a chance to see a flying saucer?
Well, just a few falling stars is all. That's all I wanted to ask you, and I appreciate your program.
Thank you for calling Night Call, Mike. Mr. Mike Fluellen from Grand Junction, Colorado, listening on KEXL. And our guest tonight
is the Assistant Director of the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, Mr. Richard Hall from Washington, D.C. Our topic, UFOs, are they real? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that for ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great
life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
UFOs, are they real? That's our topic on Night Call tonight, and our guest is Mr. Richard Hall. He's the assistant director of NICAP. And, of course, NICAP is better known as the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. And if you'd like to call Night Call and express your opinion on flying saucers or UFOs, maybe you've had a chance to see a UFO. Give us a buzz here at Night Call. Now, you remember, you can dial Night Call by dialing 313-846-6601. And if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. So, let us hear what you're thinking about tonight in regards to flying saucers. Mr. Hall has many, many stories that he can tell us, and maybe you can check some of your sightings out with him. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Hall, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. B. Hoffdahl. Good evening, Mrs. Hoffdahl. You're on Night Call. Your comments, please.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I see we've not... we've got John, have we? Or is this Terry?
This is Terry Jackson.
Okay, Terry.
Indiana University, Bloomington.
Yes, I'm sorry, Terry. You're listening on WFBM. Your comment, please.
Historically, since when have sightings been recorded? In biblical times or just recently in the late 40s or so?
That is a very good question, and it so happens that I am engaged with two other people currently doing some research on this very question. And we have traced reports back, pretty interesting reports from very good sources like scientific journals and that sort of source, and at least as far as about 1745.
1745?
Right. Now, before that, your sources start getting weaker, and the reports are fewer, farther between, and less convincing, but we are satisfied that they at least start in the 18th century.
Well, I've come over articles that have said the little green men syndrome type thing that has existed ever since, it's mentioned in the book of Moroni. I can't give you a specific quote.
What book was that?
The book of Moroni.
Okay.
The Mormon book.
I see. All right.
And this is off the top of my head. I can't really document this thing. However, what I refer to as the Green Men Syndrome of seeing strange sightings of flying through the air of airships. Have these been explained or given any modern explanation?
If you mean by the Green Men Syndrome just straight UFO reports, or do you mean actual alleged observations of little men?
Any dates on that? I mean, early days.
Oh, the earliest dates of reports of some kind of occupants of the UFOs?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not too clear on. There are some reports that go back to the very early part of the 20th century, as far as I know about.
Dick, were they still reporting the same type of ship as they're reporting today?
Some of the reports are amazingly similar. In fact, we're doing research for a book, and one of the things we plan to do is to compare some strikingly similar cases of 20th century reports with, say, 18th and 19th century reports, where they went through the same maneuvers, they had the same appearance, shape, etc.
Terry, what does that say to you?
I couldn't hear it.
Basically, Terry, Dick said that they have had sightings for many, many years, and they've been quite similar, you know, back into the 18th century. If this were so,
How would you feel about this? In other words, if you found out that there were flying saucers running around in the 18th century.
Well, to me, the redundancy, the pattern itself seems to indicate some validity. The situation, the whole subject of UFOs, and I can't see how possibly... I'm from Missouri. I have to be short, just like everybody else, but the redundancy within of description that these sightings have had throughout the years seems to add a great deal of validity to their existence. There's just one more thing, and then I'll leave you alone. Does a discernible pattern appear as regard to time of year or to season?
No, we have not noticed any particular seasonal pattern, except some newspaper editors seem to like to report that they are nothing but summer madness, but this simply isn't so, because they're seen, they've been seen in Antarctica during the midst of winter, and we've had waves of sightings in the United States in the midst of winter as well as summer.
Well, I was wondering about the weather situation, you know, the rising clouds and the heat situation.
No, I would say they had been seen in virtually every kind of weather conditions, and there doesn't seem to be any pattern whatsoever in relation to weather or season.
How about magnetic lines on the face of the Earth? Would they be more likely to be witnessed in a certain area of the country?
No, again, we have studied this geographical pattern, and there doesn't seem to be any relationship to geological features or anything of that nature. The only discernible pattern over the years is that they seem to gather in one relatively small geographical area, as if they were looking it over and studying it pretty thoroughly, and then they move on to another little area. For instance, this summer, there was quite a concentration in July and early August in New Mexico, Oklahoma, that area. Yeah. A few years ago, there was a very similar concentration in Northern California.
Mr. Jackson, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Russ, Mr. Hall, thank you very much.
Good night, sir. Mr. Terry Jackson, gentleman from Bloomington, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Let's go now to Denver, Colorado, to Mrs. B. Hoffendahl, listening on KTLN radio. Hello, Mrs. Hoffendahl, you're on Night Call. Your comment, please, ma'am.
Thank you. I wanted to ask Mr. Hall if he thought that there would be any lifting of the secrecy by our Air Force. It doesn't sound much like it, after what I've heard him say.
Well, I doubt that the Air Force would, on their own, lift the secrecy at this point, because we happen to believe that they're just too far out on a limb.
Yes.
That they have given out these explanations for so many years and denied that anything is being seen, that it would be extremely awkward and embarrassing for them at this point to admit that something was being seen. But I think there could be some public revelation about this forced through the Congress. This is one of our goals, one of NICAP's goals.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I belong to the UFO group here in Denver, and we discuss this occasionally and think that now, in our opinion, would be a good time for them to come forth with the information. We think people have heard considerable about them now, even though there is some thought of the panic situation. But still, I think it is getting some publicity now, enough that people should be able to absorb it, those that feel it is so ridiculous.
Yes, I think Dr. Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychologist, who incidentally was an ICAT member, I think he put it very well. People do not panic about the H-bomb. Why should they panic about something that has been with us for so many years and has shown no evidence of any harm?
Yes.
Mrs. Hoffendahl, may I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
You belong to the local UFO group out in Denver, correct?
Yes.
Why do flying saucers interest you?
Beg pardon?
Why do they interest you? Why do you take your time to be concerned about these things?
I don't know, but I am. I have never seen one, but I am very interested, very concerned, and I think it's a great pity that it is so ridiculed. I know here on our local station, they ridicule anyone that discusses this. We have some very, very intelligent intelligent and very sincere people who are ridiculed every time they appear on a television program or a radio program. And I think it's a great pity. You know, I know that just because I haven't seen something, I don't say that, you know, the other fellow's a liar when he tells me he has seen it.
Well, have you ever asked yourself why, though? Why the great interest?
I don't know. It's just something that I believe. I really can't give a good, solid explanation. I read a great many books on it. I would like to ask
Mr. Hall
if he has read the book, A Dweller on Two Planets.
No, I haven't read it. I have heard of it.
Pilot. Well, this is the story of Atlantis, common Atlantis. And this tells that they had the spaceship Sam. And this gentleman who was asking about the early history of spaceships, he might find this book quite interesting.
What was the name of that book again, B?
A Dweller on Two Planets.
All right, I think we'll say goodnight to you then, and thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you.
Good night, Mrs. B. Hoffendahl from Denver, Colorado, a lady who believes in flying saucers. Let's go out to Bloomington, Indiana now. A listener on WFBM, Mr. John Yettis. Good evening, John. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Okay,
John, I'm going to ask that you hang up the telephone. We have a very poor connection with you, and I'll relay your question to Mr. Hall, and he'll be able to answer you on the air a little bit better than he can on the telephone. All right, John? All right, thank you, John. Did you get the question, Dick?
I heard the first part about UFOs approaching automobiles.
Right, he wants to know what knocks out the engine, and secondly, what type of power plant do they have to move the UFOs?
Now, this, we don't really know. There's been some speculation that this would require a very strong electromagnetic field of some kind. Exactly what kind, we have no way of knowing. And it has been suggested by such people as Dr. Herman Oberth, the pioneer space flight, that these things, these beings, whoever is controlling these things, must have figured out gravity, must have an understanding of it, and must be using some form of anti-gravity. But beyond that, we really couldn't say. These are the ultimate questions.
Well, are we working on any similar devices that you know of?
Not that we know of, but I might mention that our director has an article coming out in the January issue of True Magazine along these lines, which concerns the possible power sources of UFOs.
What about the Russians?
There again, if they were, I don't think we would have any way of knowing it. We have, as far as unclassified work is concerned, we have no evidence of any work along these lines. Oh, well, there is some work being done along anti-gravity lines. We know of that.
Whereabouts?
Oh, at universities all over the country and at such institutions as the Martin Company in Baltimore.
Well, would this electromagnetic field of force, this would also kick out the automobiles and the telephones, etc., etc.?
Yes, and
as well as giving propulsion to the ship.
Yes, now there again, I forgot to mention that, there very likely is some connection between the power source of the UFOs and the EM effects, I guess he was suggesting. Probably this is an incidental effect of the power source. This would be our supposition.
We're talking tonight to Mr. Richard Hall. He is the Assistant Director of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, better known as NICAP. Our topic, UFOs, Are They Real? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself. Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People. We're talking about UFOs tonight, and are they real on Night Call? And our guest is Mr. Richard Hall. He's director of NICAP, an organization devoted to the investigation of flying saucers and unidentified flying objects. If you'd like to join us here on Night Call, let me invite you. All you have to do is call area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, if you call us, please make that call station to station. Our night call number is area code 313-846-6601. If you get a busy signal, please do not become discouraged. Just hang up the telephone and dial us again, and eventually you'll get through. Our lines are open on night call. Area code 313-846-6601. And, Mr. Hall, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. George Mayo. Good evening, Mr. Mayo. You're on Night Call. Your comment, please, sir.
George Mayo. And do you think that any of the unidentified saucers had anything to do with the New England
fire thing? There's a question I knew would come up tonight. Mr. Hall, what do you think?
Actually, I suspected it would come up, too. We have been looking into that possibility because we are acutely aware of these previous cases of electromagnetic effects, which have on occasion affected house lights and, as well as automobiles and aircraft. So far, we have not found any really strongly convincing UFO reports associated with the New England blackout. We do, however, have some sketchy reports, in fact, perhaps six or eight of them, which occurred shortly before or shortly after the blackout. Now, whether there's a connection or not, we are not prepared to say. We're not fully convinced there was any connection.
Mr. Hall, several years ago, it seems to me I recall reading a story coming out of Seattle about their telephones failing up there. Was it in Vancouver? Would this be connected?
Well, again, it's a possibility. We have recorded cases of UFOs affecting telephone lines as well, but we do not pretend that UFOs are behind everything, lurking behind every bush, and they account for every mystery, but this could be.
George, do you believe in flying saucers?
There's something, but I believe that that Russia has quite a bit to do with it, because in the United States, all real high-frequency generators sets and induction sets have been outlawed, and were supposed to be out of use by 1965, which would cause trouble on radios and television, and cause melding of certain units in, like this New England light failure.
Now, you mean there are certain types of radios that are outlawed here in the United States?
There are certain types of high-frequency induction melding outfits.
Now, I don't understand what you mean by that. I'm not an engineer.
Well, they are, the 9000 series have been outlawed here in the United States, and 1965 was supposed to be the last they are used. And they do have a lot to do with radio.
I see.
Has any reason been given for this by the FCC?
Oh, yes, it's been definitely proved that they are a menace to radios and police reports and airplane communication.
Oh, I see.
But this other, now we do know that Russia's got smart people, and we do know that the United States is at best with Thompson. And
well, you might get an argument there. I mean, we can't say that the Russians are 9 feet tall, you know.
No, but they're not too dumb. But what they could get a, we have planes that go faster than sound, and so they could have a gyroscope plane that's good.
Well, I think on the possibility of the Russians being responsible for the UFOs, we have looked in, as I mentioned earlier, into the background of UFO reports in history, and I think this is the biggest argument against the Russians being responsible, because, as we all know, at the close of World War II, the Russians were in very sad shape technologically, and there were UFO sightings throughout World War II and prior to World War II. So, although it's conceivable that they might very recently have developed something, they certainly could not account for all the UFO reports.
Does the Russian press ever comment about UFOs?
As a matter of fact, Radio Moscow has had a few comments from time to time, and usually negative. American listeners have asked Radio Moscow for their views, and Radio Moscow, in one instance that I recall, replied that if you don't believe your own Air Force, why would you believe us?
Touché.
And also, the Soviet Academy of Sciences has pretty thoroughly debunked UFOs, and the Russians in general have tended to blame it on Western warmongers.
So everybody's pointing fingers at one another, then.
Yeah.
Well, and as you both know, 24 years ago today, none of us would have thought that we would have a lot of our ships sink in less than a month.
What was that?
24 years ago today, you wouldn't have thought that Japan, with them in in Washington, that they would have had the facilities to went to Pearl Harbor and bombed out all of our ships there.
Right, I see your point, George.
And, the Chinese are not sitting still down there. Those people's not getting much to eat, so they must be doing something with what they're working with.
Well, Mr. Mayo, I want to thank you for your comments on that call.
All right, thank you.
Nice talking to you, sir. Mr. George Mayo, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, who is listening on WFBM, and suggesting possibly that UFOs might be of Russian origin. Let's go again to Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. George Ransford. Good evening, George. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Well, thank you. Good evening, Russ. And I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask Mr. Hall.
Yes, sir.
Several years ago, I've been following this thing since about 1948, I guess, off and on, just as a hobby. And in the early sightings, around 48, there were several sightings of these so-called green fireballs. And this was the around the time of our first atomic testing out in New Mexico and so forth. And also, I had seen one around Indianapolis, and it's I was just wondering if there's been any recent reports of these so-called green fireballs.
George, you saw a fireball?
Yes.
Now, describe it for me.
Well, I actually have seen two, believe it or not, and both times we had a witness with me.
Well, no, I mean, how big are they? What do they look like?
I can't say, because I had nothing to judge the size of the object with. It appeared to me to be, now, approximately the size of a basketball, believe it or not, and it kept getting larger as it came in. And it was a real odd color green, which I've never seen before in my life. And, of course, I did not get to view this for any length of time, probably a very few seconds.
Well, now, does this come out of the sky or out of the ground or where?
No, this came out of the sky toward the ground. And it did not fall. I mean, a shooting star and so forth has a trajectory to it. This did not follow that pattern. It was more of a straight line, I would say. And it seemed to be like a phosphorus a flare, like they use in the services.
Hmm.
A greenish, it was a real odd green color.
Maybe a copper-burning color.
Possibly, yes. It was a very strange green color.
Mr. Hall, can you tell us anything about fireballs?
Well, the green fireballs that were seen primarily in New Mexico back in 1948 and 49 were commonly described as copper green. And at least one
outstanding expert on meteors felt that there was something very unusual going on, and that was Dr. Lincoln LaPaz at the Institute of Meteoritics at the University of New Mexico. We have not had, to get to his question, we have not had any recent reports of green fireballs, and we are puzzled about exactly how these things fit into the UFO mystery, if they fit at all. Dr. LaPaz suggested at one point that since he had been unable to track any down as an experienced meteorite chaser, he felt that they must be some kind of ice missile being developed by somebody, that such that they crashed and no traces were ever found. But we just don't know. The Air Force had a project at one point called Project Twinkle set up to investigate specifically...
They always have very original names, don't they?
to investigate specifically the green fireballs, and we inquired about this at the Pentagon and got two contradictory answers as to whether this project had ever closed up and written the final report, so we don't know. This might be a good point for some congressional investigators to look into.
George, what do you think fireballs are?
I haven't the slightest idea. I know that I've seen something that I've never seen live in one other time before, and I was wondering if there was any recent report. That was the main thing. I had one other comment I'd like to make.
Go right ahead.
Relative to a radio station up in Marion, Indiana, which is approximately 65 miles northwest of us, or northeast of us, rather. And it happened a couple of weeks ago, verified by state police and sheriff's deputies, that one of these UFOs was hovering above the radio station. And the station was actually taken off of the air, even though it was still transmitting. All the power seemed to be absorbed. And I wondered also if there was any other cases of this type that's been reported. And I'm interested in this from the standpoint that I am a ham radio operator, and anything that deals with the radio input, I'm quite interested in, so we might comment on that.
Dick? We had that report from Frank Edwards, who is one of our board members. He's located in Indianapolis, and he had talked to the man at this station in Marion, and we had that same information. This has happened on a few other occasions. Once this summer in Buenos Aires, there was perhaps one of the best witnessed UFO sightings of all time. I believe this was in July, where an object came over the city. It was an elongated, glowing object, kind of cigar-shaped, and its presence was announced on radio and television, and according to the news reports, half the city, which I believe is about 5 million people, about half the city rushed out to take a look at it, and all the newspapermen rushed out onto the roofs of the newspaper offices. There were several different series of photographs taken of this object, and they were printed, and they were picked up by one of the U.S. wire services and printed in some papers here. Now, during this sighting, one of the television stations in Buenos Aires was blacked out as the object accelerated and left the scene. The television station blacked out.
Well, now, what are you suggesting? That it pulls the power right out of the television for some way? Is this what you're saying to me?
Yes. You mean myself?
Well, I'll tell Dick or George.
I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just reporting. As we determine.
Well, now, if they do take the power out of something like this, and we keep talking about saucer shape and cigar shape, what's the difference, really? Is one larger than the other, or is there some purpose? I've heard it said that some people think that the little saucers go into the big cigar-shaped one.
Well, we haven't been able to define them that carefully to determine whether they have different functions or not, and actually some of the objects that are described as cigar-shaped prove on closer examination to be disc-shaped objects viewed edge-on, such that they give a cigar-shaped shape with pointed ends.
I see. George, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
I want to thank you for allowing me to get on, and I'm sure other people have some questions, so I'll get off of here.
Thank you, sir. Mr. George Ransford from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Richard Hall from NICAP. Our topic, UFOs, Are They Real? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America,
busy America. Busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you know who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People, and we're talking about UFOs tonight on Night Call, and are they real? Our guest is Mr. Richard Hall, and he's the Assistant Director of NICAP, better known as the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena. If you have a comment on flying saucers or UFOs, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. You may dial us direct, and you may reverse the charges. You may call collect if you wish. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Hall, we have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, Mr. Bill Williams, and he's listening on WFBM tonight. Good evening, Bill. Your comment, please.
Fine, Russ. How are you?
Real fine, sir.
I've tried calling many times. You've got a busy line.
Well, we have a lot of listeners on Night Call. Bill, your comment.
I'd like to ask Dick a couple of questions. One thing, why haven't they contacted us?
There's a good question for you, Dick.
Well, I think there are many possible reasons. Suppose that we were going out to Mars and discovered a civilization there of beings who did not resemble us.
We'd try and sell them toothpaste right away.
Beings that didn't even resemble us closely physically. That would be the number one roadblock. Number two, we would have to study this society and figure out what they were up to, whether they were hostile, whether they had some kind of germs that we had no immunity to. There are any number of reasons like this. Now, if this is a problem for us, supposed extraterrestrials coming the other way would have very similar problems. We don't know that they would even have the same psychological makeup as we do. In fact, some of their behavior and some of the weird flight patterns suggest that they might be quite different psychologically. So it may not be all that easy to just land and say, take me to your leader.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but it seems like that if they have the intelligence, they would find some way of contacting.
Yes, this is certainly would be logical, and it's not impossible at all. And actually, we expect it to happen sooner or later, just a question of time, and it conceivably could have happened already. Unfortunately, the reports of occupants, alleged occupants of UFOs, are some of the most confused, and there are more crackpots area of the field than any other, so it's hard to evaluate.
Now, what do you mean, crackpots?
I mean people who...
publicity seekers.
People who claim they ride all over the universe with golden-haired beings who are here to save us from ourselves, essentially.
Well, that was the Adamski book, wasn't it?
That's one.
Flying saucers have landed.
Another question?
Yes, Bill.
What has he run into in the religious issue on this?
Well, there are most major religions have accepted the possibility of life on other planets quite readily. As a matter of fact, we have a couple of religious people on our board of governors, one Dr. Marcus Bach at the State University of Iowa School of Religion, and Reverend Albert Baller of Clinton, Massachusetts, who's a congregational minister. There does not seem to be any religious objection to this possibility.
I have never found anything that said that God created life on any other planet except Earth. Now, there is a possibility that they could have, but it's a long range.
Bill, how would you feel if you found out that there was life on other planets?
I think this is one thing that is keeping this down, I think it would shake the whole United States up to find out that they've got to create a life on another planet. If they're so far advanced that they can come to us, I think it would shake up religion quite a bit. I would wonder then what the historians have put on, what to believe to stay at the gate.
It'd sort of shake your faith in mankind, then.
I believe it would. I think they would be one of the biggest upheavals in religion that we've ever seen.
Not only that, but probably in government and practically every area that man prides himself on being top dog. Well, Bill, I want to thank you for calling that call.
May I ask Richard something?
Yes.
You mentioned Frank was on the board. I'm a photographer, and I have seen things which I cannot explain, but I would like to actually see more of what they call UFOs, and if I get with Frank, is there a possibility? Do they have some kind of watchdog method?
Being a system of reporting sightings?
Right.
Well, we have investigation units all over the country, and we don't have one right in Indianapolis, but you could report sightings to Frank Edwards, and he, as a matter of fact, reports them on the air there and forwards reports to us.
Bill?
Yes, sir?
Were you asking whether or not you could get a chance to see some of the original photographs?
No, I would like to be in position to maybe take a photograph.
I see.
So maybe I can touch with Frank. He's quite a buff on.
Yes, he is, and quite an expert.
Yeah, a lot of people think he's a crackpot, but I'll listen to him.
Okay, Bill, thanks for calling NICOF.
You bet.
Good night, Mr. Bill Williams, gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's go out to Purdue, Indiana now, listener on WFBM, Mr. Mitt Catlin. Good evening, Mitt. Welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please, sir.
Well, dear Russ, enjoy your program. I'd like to ask
you're very kind.
Call. While I've been waiting, there was one mention of the sighting in Buenos Aires. But while I was waiting on the phone, that was the only mention. My question was, has there been reports from other parts of the free world currently, or let's say in the last 15, 20 years?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the wave this summer started internationally. There were sightings in France, Portugal, Spain, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina, over the Pacific Ocean, and many other points. This was reported briefly by the newswire services before they seemed to lose interest.
Was there any way of checking the reliability?
In some cases, there are. We have members in about 25 foreign countries, and we have some members of our advisory panel in a number of other countries, so we can check out some of them.
Dick, you have a newspaper that your outfit puts out called the UFO Investigator, is that correct?
Yes.
It seems to me in the August edition that someone sent me, there was a story about Exeter, New Hampshire, and a sighting down there.
Yes.
Wasn't that one of the best so far?
That is certainly one of the most thoroughly investigated and seemingly reliable cases in many years.
Mitt, had you heard about this one?
No, I haven't.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that one, Dick?
All right. On the night of September 3rd in Exeter, New Hampshire, which is in southern New Hampshire, there were a number of citizens who saw an object maneuvering at low altitude, and one woman was so badly frightened that the police found her sitting in her car, scared to drive off, and they didn't believe her when she said that she had seen an object moving around. Well, later they got more calls on it, and finally they went out to check up on it, and they saw the object themselves. They saw an egg-shaped object with a row of pulsating lights on it, which rose up from behind some trees and started moving right toward them. And they were pretty frightened by this.
The police,
yes. They were pretty startled and frightened and jumped in the patrol car for protection. They felt they were going to be burned by the thing. It was glowing so brightly.
Now, you have the names of these policemen if somebody wanted them. We're not just making up stories here.
Oh, yes. One of them was Officer Eugene Bertrand of the police department. This was double-checked, and Saturday Review did an excellent write-up of this. Jeffrey Fuller went up, and investigator John Fuller just went up and personally double-checked our whole investigation and reported the exact same facts in Saturday Review.
Pardon me, Dick, but did they feel any
Did they feel anything?
They said they retreated to the car because they were afraid of being burned. Had they felt any pressure?
No, they hadn't in this case, but they just feared because the lights looked so bright, they felt they might burn them. But on the same night, in Angleton, Texas, there were two deputy sheriffs who had a very similar experience, and they did feel heat from a UFO.
What is the possibility of the majority, or perhaps even all of the UFOs that have been sighted being our own Air Force, but people of our own security reasons they would keep?
I think the chances are practically nil, because the things have been seen way back in history, back during World War II and before. We have very similar reports. One that very interesting one was in 1904, when a ship off the coast of California was buzzed by three objects. One of them was egg-shaped, the other two were round, flying in formation.
1904, did you say?
1904. This is from the U.S. Weather Bureau, reported by the ship, the USS Supply was the name of the ship.
Well, Mitt, we have several callers standing by. Can we cut it short here now?
Yes, I have just one more question.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to add, I have very definitely believed life in other sources, not in our own, in other words, satellites of other stars. But the time distance thing is just so interesting. I do know, or at least I think I remember, that the nearest star, which could be the only nucleus of the source, is 44 light years away. And this, of course, is billions and trillions and quadrillions of years in our time. How is it possible to imagine or can be reconciled as a spaceship, so-called, a UFO, could travel this distance?
Well, number one, we don't rule out this solar system yet, but even if we grant your assumption, number two, there are several stars much closer than 44 light years that are suspected of having planets. As a matter of fact, I believe there's one about 7 light years. Brings it well within the realm of possibility.
Well, Mitt, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much, Russ.
Good night, sir. Mr. Mitt Kaplan from Peru, Indiana, listening on WFBM. And I think if we hurry, we have time for a caller from Massachusetts, listening on WBAL, Mr. William Marengo. Good evening, Bill. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call. Yes, sir. Your comment, please.
Yeah. Well, actually, I really can't comment too much because I'm in the other room and I've got you on the other room today.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have three questions I would like to ask. They are, number one, have any UFOs been known by ground stations to have chased any of our satellites? Number two, have any of our satellites ever sensed the presence of UFOs about their orbit? And three, have most sightings been in areas of greatest magnetic electrical disturbance?
Okay, you've got about 45 seconds to answer that, Dick.
Well, I think in that case, I will mention there have been reports by the Moonwatch people of objects seen apparently following satellites. But most interesting, some of the astronauts have seen various things, including astronaut McDivitt photographed an oval-shaped object, which is totally unexplained, the GT-4 flight.
And these are available. This is definite.
These were released by NASA, and we published them in the UFO Investigator membership newsletter.
Now, in 15 seconds, what about the last question, the area of flux?
That, I'm not sure exactly what he means. There's no particular pattern related to any magnetic fields that we know of.
Bill, we don't have any more time remaining on Night Call, and I want to thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, good night. Mr. William Margo from Massachusetts, listening on WBAL. Our guest tonight was Mr. Richard Hall, and he's the Assistant Director of NICAP, better known as the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena. Dick, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
All right, Russ, I really enjoyed it.
Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest is Senator Daniel Brewster of Maryland. He recently returned from Vietnam. Our topic, what is the war doing to the people of Vietnam? Until tomorrow night, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.